Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up over the next half hour, bridging the gap between the deaf and those who can hear. If you're listening to this program, you're already one step in the right direction. And an angel with a palette. She's a little lady with a giant-sized dream. The official portrait painter of the Pope's wants to paint the next Sistine Chapel. We find out more about her. But first, in London Tuesday, the Catholic Bishops' Conferences of England and Wales and of Scotland issued a joint statement with the British government welcoming the upcoming visit of Pope Benedict in September. Philippa Hitchin has this report.
Pope Benedict's visit to Britain from the 16th to the 19th of September will be the first ever state visit of a pope to the United Kingdom. Pope John Paul's 1982 trip was considered simply a pastoral journey because of the delicate political situation in the wake of the Falklands conflict earlier that same year. The joint statement from the government, together with the bishops' conferences of England and Wales and Scotland, says Pope Benedict's visit to Edinburgh, Glasgow, London, Coventry and Birmingham will be an unprecedented opportunity to strengthen ties between the UK and the Holy See on global initiatives and to stress the important role of faith in creating strong communities. Highlights of the visit will be the beatification of 19th century theologian Cardinal John Henry Newman and a major speech to British civil society at Westminster Hall in London. The Pope will be received by Queen Elizabeth II at the Palace of Holyrood House, her official residence in Scotland, and he'll visit the Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Rowan Williams, at his headquarters in Lambeth Palace on the south bank of the River Thames. Other key elements will include a public mass in Glasgow, a prayer vigil in London, an ecumenical encounter in Westminster Abbey, and an event focusing on the Church's role in education. The statement says relations between the Christian churches will be a theme of this visit, as will relations between major faiths represented in the UK today. Briefing journalists in London on Tuesday, Scottish Cardinal Keith Patrick O'Brien noted a defining feature of the Pope's teaching has been to remind Europe of its Christian roots and culture and to give guidance on the moral issues of the day. It is my hope, he added, that we all open our hearts to his words. For his part, the Archbishop of Westminster, Vincent Nicholls, stressed the historic significance of this visit for all people in Britain today.
This is a deeply significant moment for the country as a whole, and of course for the Catholic community. And I hope it will show the Catholic community as being a real contributor to the well-being of this nation.
For full details of the Pope's forthcoming visit, just go to the user-friendly website, which was also launched on Tuesday, www.thepapalvisit.org.uk. I'm Philippa Hitchin.
You've probably seen them before, animatedly gesticulating with their hands and mouthing words, but emitting few sounds. Theirs is the silent world of deafness, a secret and mysterious world to most of us who can hear. They look and act like everybody else, except when they don't turn around when you call out their name. So, sometimes deaf people are looked upon as being strange, different, not quite normal.
I have to admit that I struggle with it, and I thank God for the opportunity to just pray some of those frustrations away.
No, Nicole Clark isn't deaf. She can hear just like those of you listening to this program. She's frustrated, though, because she sees how the deaf, or people seen as being different, are often treated, how they can be stigmatized, ostracized, and sometimes ridiculed. Nicole, the official sign translator for the Archdiocese of Sydney, Australia, has dedicated her life to being a bridge between the deaf and those who can hear.
I think God very specifically gave me the ability to hear because I'm probably not patient enough to be a deaf person because I see the exclusion and the oppression and I find it quite overwhelming. And I have learnt so much from a deaf person's ability to be patient and to just live with the exclusion. But I think it's a responsibility of all of those who have encountered both parts of living, the part of the world that can hear and the part of the world that can't. It's our responsibility to enlighten. I often say you can't criticise someone for being ignorant, but after they're no longer ignorant, arrogance is certainly a challenge.
Arrogance out of ignorance is a challenge, one that is likely to grow unless people start getting to know their deaf neighbor, colleague, or classmate. The World Health Organization estimates that some 280 million people worldwide have moderate to profound hearing loss in both ears. And the numbers are growing, thanks to longer life expectancies and a growing global population. Speaking of the difficulties deaf people face, Pope Benedict said there's a lingering culture today of real prejudice and discrimination against them. These are deplorable and unjustifiable attitudes, he said, because they are contrary to respect for the dignity of the non-hearing person and his or her full social integration. Well, Maura Buckley from Ireland is one of the some 1.3 million Catholic faithful who are deaf. Through her translator, Veronica, she told me of some of the challenges she and other deaf people face in society today. Be patient during the pauses. That's Maura speaking to us through sign language.
The challenges are access, lack of access to information, access to the general communication in the church, in public places, and without interpreters we are lost.
How do you think that the Catholic Church can improve its ministry to deaf people?
Learn about deaf people, get information about deaf people, have deaf awareness, understand their language, culture, and so on. Make them feel as if they're not very different, that they're just like us. The only thing they cannot do is hear. They're like hearing people, and when they have access to communication, you do not see the difference. And include them. Make deaf people feel that they are one of them. Include them.
In an effort to include deaf people and the hearing impaired in ever new ways, the Vatican recently held an international conference on ministry to the deaf called Ephata, a command to open up or open one's ears to God and to possibilities. Well, Liverpool's Archbishop Patrick Kelly was one of the organizers of the event. He's also president of the International Catholic Foundation for the Service of Deaf Persons.
One of the gifts of St. Paul was to describe us as a body. And he said, in this body, every single member is indispensable. And the point of the image was, curiously, not primarily our unity, but our diversity. And the eye can't say to the ear, I don't need you. The head can't say to the feet, I don't need you. And St. Paul even said, the weakest members are indispensable. Now, we are only a healthy society when that is the reality. For example, a restaurant. We like mood music and dark colours. But that means deaf people can't communicate in a restaurant. My sister has hearing loss. And she says, when she goes to any place where there's background music, which is almost everywhere, she said, my head is spinning because I then cannot hear what anybody's saying. And even in church, one of the examples I give when we're designing a church, make sure the light is evenly spread so that you don't cast shadows across faces because the faces and the lips must be seen. So we must always be learning.
I was shocked to learn that 80% of deaf or hearing impaired people live in low and middle income countries. Pope Benedict lays the blame on the lack of appropriate policies and legislation and on the difficulty in accessing primary health care. Deafness, in fact, is often a consequence of illnesses that are easily curable. Sometimes it's simply a question of nutrition. But Archbishop Kelly suspects that the high incidence of deafness in developing nations reflects a dark side of wealthy countries.
There's one very sad reason. There can be screening, and babies in the womb who are found to run the risk of being deaf in many richer countries will be aborted. I know a lady who was told she was expecting twins who would be deaf, and she was asked to go and see a specialist, and she thought to help her to bring them up and educate them, and found the specialist was to enable her to end the pregnancy. And she, being a nurse and a strong lady, said, "May I repeat, I'm expecting babies, and expecting means I'm waiting for." The irony is, she said, "and when I gave birth to my two sons, they were not deaf, in fact. In fact, they became leading choristers of a cathedral choir. But you can see the message that if you're not perfect, then our society said, well, do we really need you?" That may be one of the factors.
What can the Universal Church do, for example, in areas where there's a lack of funding, in Africa, in the Middle East? How can the church help to see a continuing education for deaf people, for deaf children particularly, so they can be inserted as full members of the church community?
I think, first of all, lessons from history. What now has been accomplished, for example, in the United States or in my own country, it began in very small ways. It began with somehow people who, their hearts, the great phrase, effleter, were opened to this particular group of people, because somebody once put it this way: you can see the white stick of the blind person, you can see the wheelchair, you cannot see the deafness. So it tends to be forgotten. I think, therefore, if people are beginning, let them not lose heart. But the second thing, the whole question of funding is a massively complex issue on all sorts of levels across the world and in the church today. But I do believe one absolutely central issue of the church's priority is where there is an opportunity to open up hearts and minds to the gospel, while we do things like building wells because there's no water and all these things, yes, fine, but we're sent to bring the good news, and therefore the emphasis on authentic catechesis, schooling, for me is absolutely central.
You mentioned earlier this church should be thinking about even just the lighting in a church, how to get the deaf population involved.
That's right.
So what else can the church do to allow these people to be more a part of the congregation?
One thing which some parishes in Liverpool, where I serve as Archbishop, just one or two, have now taught the congregation to use sign language. So when deaf people come, the whole congregation knows how to do the responses in sign language.
You're kidding. And, no, that's quite amazing.
And it is wonderful to see. And some of the schools now, they teach all children authentic sign language. One of the problems is there is around this thing called Makaton, which is a pseudo sign language. It's not, quite rightly, let us say, American sign language is as different, let's just the example, as different from British sign language as, say, Italian would be from English. They are languages in their own right, and therefore people often say, why can't you all get one sign language? Which their answer is quite generally, well, when the rest of the world decides to speak one language, we'll do the same. That's where this awful, I don't know what it is, you will do what we want you to do, whereas there are cultural profound differences. One of them, and sorry we're on radio, not television, I can show, but in England, the sign for the Son of God is only used for the Son of God, not for the son of anybody else. And it's a sign where the hand starts at the heart of the person signing. And as far as we know, it arose because the first priest to try to do it was pondering St. John's Gospel, the Son who is nearest the Father's heart, the Son who's in the bosom of the Father has made God known. So there are wonderful little gifts like that which we mustn't lose.
What can we learn from the deaf?
I learnt to receive the Gospels using my eyes, and I realised that our Lord himself was a man who used his eyes. Nearly all his stories, when you look again, are about watching and seeing. He was so observant. And whether it matters, I don't know. I happened to read when I was beginning this marvellous gift of sharing this life, I read two books, one about William Shakespeare, one about Charles Dickens, and it happened, both authors made the same point: the secret of their writing was they looked and observed. Not that they listened or had imaginations. It wasn't imagination. It was their sheer power of observation. They say Shakespeare's latest plays are full of the images of the Forest of Arden, where he played as a little boy. He used his eyes, so we should do the same.
Jesus wanted to give face to a new humanity, a humanity of listening and of the word, of dialogue, of communication, of communion with God. And this new humanity must be without discrimination, without exclusions, so that the world will be truly for all a field of genuine fraternity. Artists today can aspire to the kind of greatness that opened the doors of the Vatican to such masters as Michelangelo, Raphael, and Bernini. But there is one young woman who dares to dream that one day her name will be added to the list of unforgettable artists whose works adorn such places as the Papal Apartments, the Pauline Chapel, and the Vatican Museums. Masterpieces to be cherished and studied for centuries to come.
In realtà ho cominciato a disegnare prestissimo, praticamente prima di imparare a camminare.
I began painting when I was just a little girl, practically before I even learned to walk. My mother understood this was my calling, and so when I was 5 years old, she enrolled me in a special school of design. I was 1 year younger than the rest of the children. When I was 11, I succeeded in getting into one of the best art schools in Moscow. There I was able to really expand on my passion and improve my drawing and painting skills. It helped me get into Moscow's Academy of Fine Arts, an extremely difficult school to get into.
All'Accademia delle Arti, perché la scuola era abbastanza forte.
Natalia Tsarkova grew up in Moscow in the Soviet era and witnessed the dawning of perestroika and the fall of the Berlin Wall.
È fondamentale avere avanti dell'età di bambina avanti questo esempio dell'artista.
From the time I was a child, it was fundamental to me to look to the great masters as examples. Artists such as Michelangelo, Caravaggio and Velázquez, but also the Russian school of the 1800s called Peredvizhnika. This period, too, was very important for me.
Under a communism that obliterated the faith, churches were destroyed and Bibles were banned. It might be something of a miracle that Bibles were a permitted textbook at the Moscow Academy of Fine Arts where Natalia studied. But then again, the gospel stories and iconography of the Bible are the very things that have inspired some of the world's greatest artists for more than 2,000 years.
Ho sempre provato una forte attrazione per l'arte sacra.
I have always felt a strong attraction to sacred art, ever since I was a child when I went to art school. Reading the Bible, for example, was even part of our study program. I believe that it was this charismatic presence of the Lord which pointed me in this direction. As His Holiness Pope John Paul II said in his letter to artists, "The Church needs art to render visible the invisible, the world of the Spirit, of God." And I too heard this call.
E anche io ho sentito questo richiamo.
A petite blonde with rosy cheeks and an angelic smile, Natalia could easily be mistaken for one of the ephemeral cherubs in her compositions. But don't be fooled by her appearance. This little lady is well on her way to realizing one big dream. not just of being the first woman to paint the official portraits of the popes, but ultimately to be the first woman to paint something as grand as the Sistine Chapel.
Natalia Tsarkova is not only artistically gifted, but also she has a great vision of these stories. She thinks a great deal upon the holy stories before she paints them. She gets to understand her subject before she does a portrait. And so if I were to be decorating a large-scale chapel or putting in a new refectory painting, Natalia Tsarkova would be the first person I thought of.
Elizabeth Lev is a professor of Christian art and architecture at Duquesne University and is a regular guest on Vatican Radio.
Natalia's already had some experience with doing larger format paintings in which she has to find a new 21st century way of treating an iconographical subject, which is 700, 800, 1,000 years old. And I think what's even more interesting in her body of work is that she has also had the opportunity to create an iconography, and something that she has done, again, splendidly well.
Natalia was the first woman to study at Moscow's prestigious Academy of Fine Arts and the first to graduate. I asked her what women can contribute to the arts that sets them apart from their male colleagues.
In realtà io sono stata per un periodo l'unica donna a frequentare l'accademia.
Well, for a period I was the only woman student at the academy because it was extremely rare that a woman be admitted. In that period, for example, my maestro would say that a woman's place was in the home, with family.
Young boys at the academy used to come up to Natalia and tease her. "Why are you here?" they'd ask. "You won't have time to paint when you're married and having kids."
Penso che, almeno per la mia esperienza, le donne possono contribuire all'arte.
I think that, at least in my experience, women can contribute to art through communicating a different sensitivity, perhaps even a different energy. And this is because women have had to work hard to emerge in a world dominated by men, and it's not easy for women.
E spesso resa difficile per le donne.
It wasn't easy for Natalia to leave her family and her home to come to Italy in 1994. But it didn't take her long to earn a name for herself as a portrait painter for the Roman nobility. And then came her biggest commission ever.
La voce si è sparsa ed è arrivata fino al Vaticano.
Word got around and even got to the Vatican, which summoned me and commissioned me to paint the portrait of Pope John Paul II. The result was judged to be excellent, and the painting became the official portrait of the Pope. Later, I carried out another 4 portraits of Pope Wojtyła. One is in Washington at the John Paul II Cultural Center. Another was donated by Cardinal Stanislaw Dziewicz to the Basilica of Santa Maria del Popolo here in Rome. And the other 2 are on display in Detroit, Michigan. Then I was commissioned to do the official portrait of Pope John Paul I, and then the one of Pope Benedict XVI.
E quindi quello di Papa Benedetto XVI.
Natalia Tsarkova has since become the official portrait artist of the popes and of many Vatican officials. She's the first woman ever to have the job.
Posso dire che è stato la realizzazione di un mio sogno.
I can say that this has been one of my dreams come true. I continue to thank the Lord for having given me this possibility. It's also a big responsibility and a great honor of which I am proud.
Natalia, you also met Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict. Tell me about your meetings with them and what did they have to say to you?
Io ho avuto questo onore di avere audienza privata.
Yes, I had the honor of meeting them in private audience. This was a very moving and beautiful experience for me. Something very special happened when I presented my first official portrait of Pope John Paul II to him.
Lui mi ha detto in russo. Ha detto in russo, sì, che sono stata molto sorpresa.
He told me in Russian. Yes, Russian. I was very surprised at that. I didn't know the Holy Father spoke Russian well, but he said this to me. you're Russian. Long live Russian art. Continue as you're doing. And so I have been continuing, as he said, up to this day. More than 15 years have already gone by, and I have painted the portrait now of my third pope. I'm very happy.
Using brushstrokes similar to Velázquez, Natalia possesses an uncanny ability to enter into her subject's very soul, from a moistened eye to a furrowed brow to a tentative smile. Natalia unveils the very intimate side of her subjects. It's like we're standing in the very same room.
Much like Leonardo da Vinci in his forays into portraiture, played a complex game of drawing out the psychology, the personality, the inner depths of the sitter, and always making us aware of the tension that the sitter trying to disguise certain aspects of his or her person. Natalia removes that tension, that barrier, and opens up to us a facet of her sitter that's a little bit unexpected. So in a figure that we see as very formal or very business oriented, we see an interest in culture. In an iconic figure, we get something homey and comfortable. And so she throws in these wonderful little facets that her observations give us about a sitter. Great art is a two-way street. Yes, you need a talented artist who is who's able to envision great stories. You also need some pretty enlightened patronage. And the artists with the greatest potential that we have in the 21st century spend most of their time doing portraits, because most people commission images of themselves. But when you have a mind like Natalia Tsarkova or several of the other present-day artists who are capable of thinking out ideas like Natalia's giant Last Supper painting, giving these artists the possibility of working on a large-scale project of a great story, a part of man's salvation or the revelation of God, that's something for them to sink their teeth in. That calls out an excellence which goes far beyond, the sitter of an individual person. And so I would like very much to see this concert between the artist and the patron offer the artist the possibility to show what he or she actually has by taking on the greatest subject matters possible.
Is Natalia Tsarkova another Michelangelo just begging to release a torrent of fabulously fresh ideas and an unparalleled mastery of the brush? Can she challenge the 21st century's godless man to appreciate God's great plan for all mankind? I don't know, but she sure is off to one heck of a start. That's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.